Morning. Today's daf in Erechin is Chav Ches. We are in Chav Zayin Amud Beis, and we just got through the Mishnah. Our eighth parak of the Masecht opened up with a discussion of what happens when there is a Beis Hamikdash, but there is no Yovel. Yovel is not in force. So it's a strange period in Jewish history in which, on one hand, we are sovereign and we do live in Eretz Yisrael, and there is a Beis Hamikdash, but the majority of the Jewish people are not there, and as a result of that, Yovel is simply not Noheg. Under those circumstances, so a person can consecrate his field, but in terms of redemption, so we're not working with a fixed rate, but rather what we're doing is we're going to redeem it at market value. So people who were Makdish the land have an opportunity now to redeem it, but only at market value. Now, what is going to be market value? So this is a free market that we're going to be describing. So there is going to be an appraisal, but at the same time, also there's going to be an auction. And with the auction that comes about, so people are going to be able to bid. The owner is going to bid. And as we learned in yesterday's daf, the owner is going to bid first. And not only is he going to be encouraged to bid first, but he must bid first. Kofin, the Bryce taught us yesterday. And with his bid that he gives, whatever number he gives is going to be a 25% surcharge. That's called Chomesh. I know Chomesh means a fifth, but it's a 25% surcharge. And so as a result of that, if he says 20, 20 really becomes 25. And so what we learned in yesterday's daf is what happens now in an auction where he's going to be bidding against another, and instead of competing with somebody else, not instead of, but when he's competing with somebody else, so that has to be taken into consideration. So that's one discussion which we're going to have, but we're going to have that shortly. Also in the Mishnah, another scenario in which, so the bids just piled up one on top of another. One said 10, another said 20, another said 30, another said 40, another said 50. Obviously, the one who said 50 now is going to have won the bid, and he's going to be able to buy it. What happens when he backs out? So because he said he was going to give 50, and because this is Bedekah Bias, and because Amiraso Legavoa, Kimisiraso Lehejot, that just simple an oral declaration, an oral pledge is now binding. So what's going to happen now is that 50 is going to go to the Bedekah Bias, period. How that's going to work doesn't really matter. But the Bedekah Bias is going to get 50. So the one who now said 50 who backed out and he rescinded, so now the Bedekah Bias is going to turn to the 40 and say to the 40, okay, he backed out, you're going to buy it for 40. Now let's just assume for a moment that the guy who bid 40 is now going to pay. Good. So now Bedekah Bias goes back to the 50 and says, look, you're 40 clear because we did sell for 40. But you did say you're going to get 50, so now you have to give the difference and you're going to have to give 10. That's what we learned yesterday in the Mishnah. Amar Rav Chisda. We are starting with the Gemara, where the Gemara now is going to be commenting on this scenario, and Rav Chisda teaches us. I'm Rav Chisda, Loshan Olosha ben Arbim, Omid bim Kamo. So everything like I just described, where the 40 person was standing hold. Ava ein bo Arbaim, Omid bim Kamo, Mishalshim b'nehem. But let's say we have the following scenario. Let's say 50 backs out, we go to 40, and 40 said, you know what, I'm going to back out as well. Okay. So now 50 and 40 back out. So now we go to the 30, and let's just assume for the purpose of illustration that our person who bid 30 is going to now pay 30 for the land. Okay, so now we are 20 short of the highest bid. So here's one of two ways in which we could do. We can go to the 50 and say, look, you'll give 10, and we can go to the 40 and say, you'll give 10. But the truth of the matter is that the one who bid 40, so he can turn around, he could say, look, I know I bid 40, and I know I'm rescinding, okay? Well, that's not good, but at the same time, however, the one who said 50, you know, included in his bid is also that range between 30 and 40, meaning obviously he is totally responsible from the 40 to 50 range, but at the same time, however, he also is partly responsible from that 30 to 40 range because, of course, included in 50 is the range of 30 to 40. So what I think is rather fair is that he'll give 10 for that 40 to 50 range. There's no dispute about that. And in that 30 and 40 range, we'll just simply split it. He'll give 5 and I'll give 5. I think that's fair. And the Rav Chisda says not only does he feel that that's a good argument, it's the correct argument. So in other words, the way it would work out now is that the one who claimed 50 is now going to have to pay 15, and the one who said 40 is going to have to pay 5. That is the halacha of Rav Chisda. The problem with that pshat, it's a nice logical argument. The problem is it doesn't seem to conform with our Mishnah. Tanan, and now the Gemara is just going to review the Mishnah because seeing if Rav Chisda's halacha can be supported by the reading of the Mishnah. Chazabo shel arba'im amashkin ad eser. So if you read the Mishnah in its simplicity, doesn't sound that way. The Mishnah says when the 50 person backs out, he'll pay 10. When the 40 person backs out, he'll pay 10. And it doesn't sound like from the Mishnah that we're going to be using this argument of, well, if we have shared responsibility, so that we were, therefore we should have shared liability. And if you and I are both vying for that 30 to 40 range, so you and I should both be now equally responsible for that range. So I'm Miley Tain Barchim Shim Bahadei Deleka Ben. I'm sorry, Bahadei question. So why don't we make the argument that Rav Chisda is proposing? So the Gemara's response is Deleka Ben Chamishim. So the Gemara's argument is, well, maybe we're not reading the Mishnah correctly. Maybe the Mishnah is not just one continuous case, but maybe the Mishnah is different cases. Meaning the Mishnah's case is someone said 50, after somebody said 40, and he backed out. Okay, good. Now clean the slate. New case. Somebody said 40, somebody said 30, and the 40 guy backed out. Maybe that's what the Mishnah is talking about. So the Gemara says it's hard to say that. So Chazer bo ben shalshim emashkin minachasav ad eser amai velitein de ben arbaim bahadei. So again, the Gemara is going to keep doing this, where the Gemara now is going to think that it's talking about one case, and then separate the Mishnah into separate cases. The Leika ben arbaim. The Gemara says no, there was no person in that particular case who made a bid of 40. Chazer ben asrim emashkin minachasav ad eser. Next case in the Mishnah where the 20 person backed out. So amai litein de ben shalshim bahadei. Why does a Mr. 30 now have to pay the 10 to 20 range and split that responsibility? So like I mentioned, Shloshim, again, same thing. So the Gemara says, okay, as we get to the end of the Mishnah, we'll see that this is really an unsupportable pshat. Chazer bo shel eser. So what happens when the person who pledged 10 now backs out? Mocher no so bishavyav v'nifran shel eser esamoser. So so what's going to happen now is we'll sell the property for whatever we can sell it for. And the difference is going to be covered between 10 and the sale price. The difference is going to be covered by the ben eser. So the Gemara says, "Valei save the ben esrim ba'aday." And why isn't the 20, the one who claimed 20, why isn't he sharing that responsibility? V'chite machanami delaka ben esrim. And again, Gemara says, "I know what your answer is going to be. Well, this is a separate case. There is no person who is claiming 20. Ihachi nifra mishal asar nifra mimenu mibayle." So then, from a syntax standpoint, then the Mishnah doesn't read well. Because the Mishnah just simply says, Nifrai Mimenu. Well, we should be collecting from him. Meaning, we don't have to identify him as a Ben Eser. Because, simply put, there's nobody else. So the Mishnah should read, Nifrai Mimenu.
He's the only one
bidding. Yeah. So, Elam Rav Chisda Lo Kasha. So Rav Chisda says, okay. So here's what we're going to do. I'm going to still hold my ground. And I'm going to still read the Mishnah. And we're going to read the Mishnah like we originally meant it. It's one case. And still, everything could work out. How so? So the Gemara now talks about differences in terms of how people back out. If, let's say, it's sequential, like our Mishnah. We go upwards in bids, 10, 20, 30, 40, 50. And now people are rescinding sequentially in the opposite order. Where first the 50 backs out. Okay. Leaving now the 40 by himself. Then the 40 backs out. And then the 30 backs out. So under those circumstances, so then when each person backs out sequentially, so then they're going to be responsible for their shortfall, their range in which they created. So when the 50 backs out, so he's going to be responsible from 50 to 40. When the 40 backs out, he will then be responsible from the 40 to 30, et cetera, et cetera. So that's our Mishnah. And when Rav Chisda says, as far as I'm concerned, I'm still right in the case, in the scenario in which they're backing out at the same time. Because now as they're backing out at the same time, so now we could talk about shared liability. Where it's true, the 50 to 40, so from that range, from 50 to 40, he stands by himself. But now as you go from the 40 to 30, and again, we're talking about a case where everyone's backing out at the same time. So at the 40 to 30, now we could talk about shared responsibility, shared liability. Because that 30 to 40 range is shared by the one who bid 40 together with the person who bid 50. And now as we move down from the 20 to 30 range, so there, that share liability by three people, by the one who bid 50, the one who bid 40, and the one who bid 30. And so now we're going to take that 10 range, and we're going to split it three ways, et cetera, et cetera. Tanya Namehachi, the Gemara supports this with a Braisa, Chazukulan Keacha, Meshashim, Menehem. Okay, and the Braisa says it. So in other words, the anantanam emashkim and the chasav al aser. Now, isn't that go against our Mishnah? Because our Mishnah talks about not shared liability, but each person being liable for only their shortfall. So Allah shmamina kid Rav Chista shmamina. So the Gemara says, okay, and so Rav Chista now is totally supportable. Now the truth of the matter is, as the Gemara is about to do, it's a really a stira between the two brises. And the Gemara says, and we could formulate this as a stira. Ika de Ramele Mirma. Some learn it as a stira between the Mishnah and Brisa, and will arrive at the same conclusion. Tenan chazebo shal aser machonosa b'shav yevani from shal aser esamos v'atanya mishal shemineihem. One Brisa says that we're going to have each person being responsible for their shortfall. We have another Brisa that says we're going to talk about shared liability. Amar Rav Chista lo kasha kama basachas kama zecher zeh. And this is now where we can insert Rav Chista's answer. If they're backing out sequentially as they're entering in, just going in the opposite direction, so then each one's going to be responsible for their liability. Masha Inkin, if they're backing out at the same time, so now we could talk about shared liability, like Rav Chista explained. Habalim omrim be'esrim v'chol adam be'esrim. Lememer de'chomesh adiv. Now, one person said 20 and the other person said 21. Who won the bid? The person who said 20. Because who's the person who said 20? The owner. What does his 20 represent? 25. So really, when he says 20, he's really now has to pay is 25. He wins the bid. So any competing bidder who bids below 25 is obviously not going to win the bid. Now there is a formula that we learned in the Mishnah just to remind you that at the same time, however, whatever principle in which the bidder is going above the owner, so the owner is going to be responsible for that. So for example, let's say the owner said 20, which was really 25. Let's say the competing bid was 21. So from a principal standpoint, so the competing bid went one over the owner. That one that he went over the owner, that's going to be tacked on to the owner. So the owner is going to have to pay 26. And we went through this in the Mishnah where whatever the overage is, that's going to have to be absorbed by the owner. What the owner is not going to have to do, and as I mentioned yesterday, he's still not going to be happy. Meaning, because from his standpoint, if I'm saying 20, I'm paying 25, now I have to pay more just because somebody's principal bid is higher than mine. Lamaisa, I'm paying more anyway. Okay, so I can't imagine he's going to be thrilled, but I guess to soften it a little bit, we are not going to add a chomesh on that overage, right? That extra that we added to him, we're not going to tack on a fifth, okay? And now you could say thank you. Okay, so lememra de chomish adif. So the Gemara says, okay, so you see here that chomish now is going to be a winning argument. And again, it makes sense. It makes perfect sense. When you say 20, it results in 25. Of course, we're going to look at your bid as 25. What else are we going to look at it as? Veriminu, but the Gemara says, but I'll tell you the problem. And that is a Mishnah Meister Sheni. The Mishnah Meister Sheni is talking about where there also is a bid over Meister Sheni, where now the Meister Sheni is going to be converted into money, and in terms of assessing its value to turn into money, so Balabais Omer B'Sela, V'Echad Omer B'Sela V'Isar. So shall sell the Isar Kodem, Imnei Shemosif Ala Keren. So if one person, meaning the owner, is going to be bidding a sell on the Meister Sheni, and along comes another person and says, you know what? It's more valuable to me. I want to give a Sela and an Isar, right? Some loose change on top of that. So then we listen and we accept the bid of the competing bid and not the owner. Even though by Meister Sheni, the halach is exactly the same. By Meister Sheni, the owner is going to be adding on 25%. So his Sela is not a Sela. His Sela is going to be a Sela and a Dinar, which far exceeds a Sela and a Nisar. And yet, we're only looking at the principal bids. Gemara says, why should that be? So, hacha dechum sharafcha dehekdeshu, chamish adif, hasam dechum sharafcha debalabayas, karna tipruk shapir chum shalom loich patlan. And the Gemara says it's actually really simple. Because when we're talking about Hekdesh and bidding and accepting the bid of the owner, when we're taking his chomish into account, of course we're going to do that. Because who's the beneficiary of that extra money? That's the Bet HaKabayis. In other words, when the Bet HaKabayis is now auctioning off a property that they own, and now we're talking about redeeming that property, so whatever they can fetch the most money, that's going to be the winning bid. So even though the owner is principally lower than his competing bid, but because of the 25% extra that he has to pay, so therefore the Beis HaMikdash is totally interested in that 25% extra because that's more revenue for them. When we're talking about Meister Sheni, what happens now as you redeem the Meister Sheni? Who is now the beneficiary of that? Not the Bet HaKabayis, not the Beis HaMikdash. the person who redeems it. The person who redeems it now is going to be able to take that food and eat in Yerushalayim. So there, truth, yes, it's true the owner has to pay a chomesh, but no, in terms of accepting the bid, we're really only going to look at the principal value of the bids. If the principal values of the bids where the competitor is higher than that of the owner, even though the owner is going to pay more eventually because he's going to add on 25%, but because the beneficiary is not the better kamayis, so therefore we only look at the principal bid, and the principal bid, therefore, is going to be determining who's going to win that auction. Amar echad harehi shali. Now, in the Mishnah, we kept going up. Owner said 20, competitor said 21. Okay, owner, you won, because you're 20, 25. And by the way, when we say you win, as we explained back in the Mishnah yesterday, it means we say to the owner, and now you're committed to your bid, meaning you have to pay what you said, because again, you won. And that's good and bad, meaning you won and you don't have a choice in the matter. But when, let's say, we got to the point in the Mishnah where the owner said 20 and the competitor said 25, so what did the Mishnah say? The Mishnah says the owner won the bid. Now, at this point, the Gemara now throws its arms up in the air. And the Gemara says, wait one second, slow down. If the owner said 20 and the competitor said 25, this is a push. Could now the owner not say, look, I know that, you know, my 20 equals 25, but you have now a competing bid, which is equivalent to mine. So at least now, let's have the choice, meaning I know I gave one of the top bids, but somebody else matched me. And can we not go over to him and ask him if he's really interested in paying 25? And do I have to pay my 20, 25? So the Gemara says, Damar Balam Dinar. So the Gemara says, well, yeah, you're right. If it were a push, so then we wouldn't force the owner to have to pay as long as the competitor is interested in actually paying 25. You're right about that. In the case of the Mishnah, he said 20 plus a little extra, a little dinar, a quarter of a sela to go along with the 20. The Gemara says, that's a difficult shot. Didn't say that in the Mishnah. Velesni dinar, velesni dinar, lo dak. So the Gemara says, and you know, the Mishnah was not precise. So the Gemara says, really, you know, the last case in the Mishnah, we had the owner paying 31 in a dinar, for reasons which we're going to explain later this morning. So over there, how can you tell me the Mishnah is only working in whole numbers, of only Salayim? Clearly the Mishnah is open to the idea of, if there's an extra dinar, we'll talk about it. So Allah Rav Adamar Balin Pruta, Velodak. So Rav gives a similar answer, but instead of talking about a dinar, which is at least a larger currency, it's a quarter of a sela, well, maybe what the owner said is he wants to give a sela and a pruta. Now, pruta, of course, is the smallest denomination known at the time. Okay, it's a fraction of a sela, and maybe that's what we're describing over here. And so therefore, the owner whose bid was 20 and a pruta is nominally greater than that of the competing bid of 25, but it is greater. And so therefore, under those circumstances, now we say to the owner, regardless of the fact that your bid is just a tiny bit over, pennies over your competitor, but you are the top bid. And therefore, congratulations, and you have to pay. Shein Mosifin Chomish al Iluyav. Amr of Chisel Oshano Elo Shalonishim Hektish Begimel. Now, the Gemara over here turns its attention to the scenario in which we're going to take whatever extra principal there was on the competitor's bid, and we're going to add that to the owner. Owner said 20, so 20, of course, becomes 25. But, so that's one add-on. On top of that, we're also, if the competitor's bid is 21, which is one over than that of his bid, we're going to take that one and we're going to also add it on, but we're not going to add a chomesh to that extra. So it's 20 plus 5 plus 1. So that gets us to 26. That's what we learned in our Mishnah. Rav Chista says, but with a qualifier. Rav Chista says, let's say, for example, we did an appraisal of the property before, and it wasn't even the best appraisal. Now, how do I know that? How am I in a position where I could judge the judges? How can I say that it's not the best appraisal? Based on the Gemara in Sanhedrin, which Rashi here quotes. Principally, what we would like in terms of appraisal and appraisal property when dealing with Hekdesh is an appraising group of 10 people, one of them being a Kohen. That's what we learned in the Gemara Sanhedrin. Now, a basin of three, under certain circumstances, can do appraisals, but in terms of Hekdesh, the best appraisal, and the correct appraisal, is to have a group of 10 people doing it, one of them being a Kohen. So over here, let's. So now I go back to what I said moments earlier. So now we're having an appraisal being done, and it's done by a Beis Din of three. It's not the best appraisal. But still, it's an appraisal. And let's say that of the, now the bidding that occurs, so let's use our example to illustrate the point. Let's say that we have a bid where the owner said 20 and the competitor said 21, but before we went to the auction, the appraiser said, you know how much of the value land is worth? It's worth 26. That's what the appraiser said. And okay, and in terms of the auction didn't bear out that appraisal, but it doesn't matter. In other words, the appraisal was 26 and the auction was 20 and 21. Okay. Under these circumstances, says Rav Chista, now, the Beis HaMikdash Yadol Al Yona, they're always in the driver's seat and any kind of transaction, and now here's going to be their argument. Look, based on the formula that we learned in the Mishnah, so we say to the owner, you're going to have to pay 26. And under normal circumstances, that extra one that we're taking from the competitor's additional amount, under normal circumstances, we would just add that and that would be the end of the day. However, your 26 does match the appraisal. The appraisal came in at 26. So we know what we're going to do. We're going to add a chomish to everything. Not only to your bid, but even to the addition that we took from your competitor's extra bid. Why? Because as long as it's matching the appraisal, if there's anything below the appraisal, so then we're going to add a chomish onto that as well. That's the chiddush of Rav Chista. Our second chiddush of Rav Chista today. Aval nishum hektish begimel mosifin. Tanya mihachi, the Gemara brings a braisa supporting this as well. Now this braisa, by the way, if we didn't have the context in which we right now currently have, literally we would not understand what the braisa is talking about. Where the machlokes between Beis Shammai and Beis Hillel is articulated in one word, mosifin versus ein mosifin. What are they talking about? Only because we now know this machlokes in the context do we understand. But now it's very strange. Now, well, before we get to the very strange, Hechidami. Ilo nashimai time de Beis Shammai. Now, if no appraisal was done, so why in the world would we add a chomish on to that additional amount? Ela denishim, so it must be that the reason why we're adding a chomish to the additional amount is because it's against an appraisal. So the Gemara says, now it's very strange. Because now it comes out that machlokes between Beis Shammai and Beis Hillel, Beis Shammai says mosifin, Beis Hillel says lo mosifin, and now we're saying that it's against an appraisal, and that's why we're adding a chomish. But now you're telling me that Rav Chista is supporting, but you know who Rav Chista is being supported by? Beis Shammai. So lemer Rav Chista damar ke Beis Shammai, and as we all know, that's unusual, that's strange, it's untenable. So the Gemara says, olam delo nishum and Beis Shammai machmirin. So the Gemara suggests, well, maybe no. Maybe the Bryce is talking about a case where no appraisal was done. Beis Shammai says, we're tacking on a chomish not only to his bid, but also the additional amount based on the competitor's bid. So the Gemara says, well, if there's no appraisal, we could say that Beis Shammai is just simply representing a chomra. The Gemara gives an alternative suggestion, and that is, it's against an appraisal, and we're tacking on a chomish, and we're flipping the brisa around. Where Beis Shammai's position is ein mosifin, and Beis Hillel says mosifin. So the Gemara says, well, and that's also strange now for another reason. Now comes out that Beis Hillel is being a machmir. How often does that happen? The answer is we know. The Mishnah Adios tells us the number of times that Beis Hillel is machmir over the Beis Shammai. It happens so seldomly that the Mishnah in Adios just actually records it. And this isn't one of them. And so the Gemara says to flip the braisa, have Beis Hillel become more machmir in a situation where we know all of Beis Hillel's homers and this not being one of them, that's untenable. So the Gemara says, okay, we're going to just simply go back and say that Beis Shammai is, we're talking about a case where there was no appraisal. Beis Shammai adds a chomish not only to the owner's bid, but to the competing bidder's extra amount as well. And even though it's not against an appraisal, and Beis Shammai represents simply a chomra. If this is the correct shot we're saying in the Braisa, so now this Braisa does not give any support to Rav Chista, neither for nor against. Okay. Amar Echad Harei Hi Shali Be'esrim V'sheish. Next case in the Mishnah. Next.
Is the holds like the chomra.
No, because in the last way the Gemara explained it, there was no nishim that was done. There was no appraisal. And Beis Shammai is just simply add on a fifth, even to the extra, simply because it's simply as a chumrah.
Because it doesn't hold
of it. And Beis Hillel doesn't hold of it, Rav Chista doesn't hold of it, but it doesn't support Rav Chista's chiddush, which is that against an appraisal, so for that we'll add a chumash. Amar ha'echad harehi shali be'esrim v'sheish. Now the last case of the Mishnah, that was a really strange one. The owner said he's ready to give 20, which means 25. The competing bidder said he'll give 26. And then we turn back to the original owner, to which the Gemara says, we turn back to the original owner, Ratzu in, lo ratzu lo, armi asa gaver b'chariken. Now at this point in time, can the owner say, look, I'm tapped out, meaning I lost the bid. I said 20, meaning that's as far as high as I want to go. 20, of course, becomes 25, but the competitor bid was 26. So even when you take my chomish into account, the competitor is larger than me. So where does the discussion go where the Mishnah says, well, you know, the owner now can pay 31 and a quarter. What just happened over there? So the Gemara is now just going to give a simple pshat in the Mishnah. So Amri asked the government, v'dinar ma'ay v'dete. So why can't he just yield to the other person? And what is 31 and a quarter? So the Gemara explains everything. I'm Rav Sheisha Tachi Kamar. So the Gemara now gives really simple pshat in the Mishnah, and that is as follows. If the original owner said he would give 20, and he'd even give 21, so now what does 21 represent with Chomish? So, I'm sorry. If he was ready to give, not 21. So the if he was ready to give 20 20 plus another 5. Yeah, thank you. So if he's ready to give 20 plus another 5, so that now comes out where it'll get us to 31 and a quarter, meaning tack on a chomish onto that. So then the Gemara says fine. So then under those circumstances, so now it will not only match the other bidder, but it will actually exceed the other bidder. I mean, the other bidder now was at 26, and if he's ready to go up to 31 and a quarter, i.e. his original bidder was 25, so under those circumstances, so now we say to the owner, good, you won the bid. That's, in other words, it's just another way to read the Mishnah, where the owner is now putting in a bid, if he's ready to go up to a bid, that with his chomish is going to exceed that of the competitor's bid, so under those circumstances, so then we'll do it. Okay.
We could say 23.
And whatever number it is, that's gonna go above 26. Okay.
So what happens when you have an appeal insurance?
By the way, I'm sorry. My numbers. I'm sorry. Let's just go back to my numbers. I just want to correct my numbers. In other words, the competitor said 26. He said 21. Which okay. That where that now is going to be the winning bid, because 21 now will come out to 26 and a quarter. Okay. Now good. Now I got the numbers clear in my head. That'll come out to 26 and a quarter. And the reason why now it turns to 31 and a quarter is because we have to take the competitor's extra and add that on. Okay, good. I got it. All right. Mishnah. We're on Chav Ches Amud Aleph, and now we are starting the Mishnah on the top of the Amud, and now we change gears. Let's ask me after. And let's change gears now. We are now going to be discussing the idea of Charamim. Okay. All of Erchin is centered around the 27th parak of Vayikra. Like if you, before you learn the Masechta, what we all should have done is just read the 27th parak from beginning to end, simple pshat, you know, Rashi as well, you know, Unklus. Why not? We're learning the Gemara anyway, and that would have prepared us well for the for this parak, because what is the 27th parak of the Masechta? It has to do all with Erchin being Makdish, Makdish Estei Achuza, being Makdish Estei Mikna. Like, we've been in the 27th parak basically for this Masechta. And I'll even go a step further, not basically, exclusively. Okay, with that in mind, so at the end of the parak, so we're introduced to an idea called Cherem. Cherem, another instrument in terms of how to donate to the base of Mikdash. Instead of saying I want to be Makdish a field, I could simply say I want to be Machrim this field. The word cherem is an interesting word and one that's really difficult to translate. In other words, we are going to say for the duration of this Masechta that cherem is just simply another form of hektesh. The land now is consecrated. However, it's different. It's not the same. Because the word cherem itself literally means destruction. And I know that sounds funny when I say it, because we're using it in the positive sense. And that's the only way we're going to be describing it, as a positive sense. But when we talk about cherem, in other words, if let's say, for example, a person's put in cherem. Right, we got to destroy him. His behavior is, you know, unacceptable. So he's in cherem now. Obviously, that's not what we're describing. What we're describing is a person donating his property. So the word cherem is a funny one. I strongly encourage, take a look at the Sefer Chinuch, where he does a wonderful job. I'm not going to read it right now. I don't have a Sefer Chinuch in front of me. I don't know it by heart. But the but look over there on the Sefer Chinuch, right around, somewhere in the 350s. Right? Kufnun Hay. I don't have the kiosk on the Sefer Chinuch. But thereabouts, where he discusses this particular mitzvah and explains the word cherem in this context, where even though it does mean destruction, it's describing somebody who is being makdish his property. The basic point of the Sefer Chinuch, if I can just paraphrase, is that when a person's given any property whatsoever, that's a bracha. And by him disavowing himself of that property, it's basically like, it's almost like a spitting in the face of a Kadosh Baruch Hu. I know you gave me this property, but I don't want it anymore. So even though you could put a positive spin on it, a very positive spin on it, I'm giving it to the Beis HaMikdash, I'm giving it to the Kohanim. But when all said and done, you're basically rejecting that which HaKadosh Baruch Hu gave you. So that's the basic idea of the Sefer Chinuch in terms of Cherem. Okay, in our context now, so we're going to be discussing Cherem, and the idea behind Cherem is that I'm donating. Who's the recipient? So here's where it gets tricky. There could be two possible recipients of Cherem. One, the Bedek HaBayis. Two, the Kohanim. Well, which one is it? Well, the one I identify. Meaning if I say I'm going to give a Cherem to the Beis HaMikdash, it goes to the Beis HaMikdash. If I say I'm going to give Cherem to the Kohanim, it goes to the Kohanim. And what if I don't articulate? As you would guess, thank you. As you would guess, that's a Machlokas. That's coming up a little bit later on. So we'll get to that. We'll get to that later on. The Pasuk, so quickly to familiarize one another. So we're deep into the 27th Perek, Pasuk Chav Ches. Ach kol cherem asher yacharim ish la Hashem mikol asher lo me'adam uveima umiseachuza lo yimacher velo yigael kol cherem kodesh kadashim hu la Hashem. So the Torah says that a person can be macherim basically anything he owns, whether it's from people, we'll explain that in a moment, whether it's from animals, whether it's from steachuza, so not to be sold, not to be redeemed, any cherem is kodesh kadashim hu la Hashem. And then the Torah goes on. Kol cherem asher yacharam min ha'adam lo yipadeh mos yumas. Okay, and that pasuk is really strange. Also needs explanation. We're not going to explain that pasuk right now. We'll come back to that a little bit. Okay, so this is the idea behind cherem. And now we start the topic of cherem.
So the difference between cherem and machlish is possible to redeem it.
Yeah.
Cherem, you're not.
Cherem, that's it. Irrevocable.
So in the case of the person who wanted the land, he could have done a cherem. He wouldn't get it back. Yes, the yesterday one. Like you said, the land was so bad, he could have done cherem.
He could have been machrim it. Yes, that's correct.
Then would have gotten it back.
That's right. And then it would have been gone forever. The Mishnah starts off machrim adam mitzono mi bekaro mi avadav mishpach umishivchosav akananim umisteachuzam. A person can be machrim, some of his sheep, some of his cattle, some of his havadim, male and female. And by the way, now you understand Adam in the Pasuk, meaning we're talking about his chattel, meaning his havadim. Umisteachuzaso and his property. V'imachrim is kulam eino muchramim, divir Rabbi Eliezer. Here's what you can't do. You can't be machrim everything. In other words, you cannot be machrim all your possessions. We're going to explain that in greater detail. Amr Rebbe Lazar ben Azariah, ma im lagavo in Adam Rasha lachrim, kol nechasav alachas kam vekam she Adam chas al nechasav. Now over here, consider. In other words, you're trying to remove yourself from all your possessions. And the Torah says, don't do that. The Torah says, you can't do that. If even though the recipient is going to be the Beis HaMikdash, which is a good cause, the Torah tells you, don't give up all your possessions. Says Rebbe Lazar ben Azariah, to squander away your possessions when the Beis HaMikdash is not being the recipient. So now we can make the easiest kal v'chomer that one could possibly make. Of course you're not allowed to squander all your possessions. If it's for a good cause you can't do it, then if it's just you're frivoling, you're just wasting your money, so then for sure one should be careful. Minahani mili, and that was our musa for the day from the Gemara. Minahani mili, the Gemara says, and where's the source of this done, Rabban Mikol Asher Lo? V'chol Asher Lo mi Adam v'lo kol Adam. So May Adam, the Gemara is carefully reading the Pasuk. As the Pasuk now inserts before all these possessions, the Pasuk inserts the letter Mem. The Mem is telling us from some of your possessions, but not all. And by the way, it sounds like both the Mishnah and the Braisa that even within every category, you're not allowed to disavow yourself of all your possessions. Meaning, you're not allowed to give away all your slaves, even if you retain other possessions. That's the simple reading of both the Mishnah and the Braisa. And for more of that, by the way, you can see the first Shita Mukubetzis on this Amud that discusses that very topic. Tanu Rabbanan, let me start again. Mikol Asher Lo, V'lo, Kol Asher Lo. Me Adam, V'lo, Kol Adam. Right, some of your chattel, but not all your chattel. Let's skip the next four words. You'll see why I'm doing that. Mi Ste'achuza, V'lo, Kol Ste'achuza. Right, some of your property, not all your property. Yachlo Yachrim, Imhechrim, Ye Mukhramim. Now, maybe the Torah is just advising us not to give away all of our property. But if we do so, the choice is as ours. Tamalamar Ach, Div Rabbi Elazar. And Rabbi Elazar tells us that no, because the Torah says the word Ach, it's a real limitation. Meaning that not only is it not advised to give all your property away, but it's simply ineffective. If you were to try to be Machrim all your property, it's Eino Mukharam. It simply doesn't work. Amar Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah, Ma'im Lagavoin, Adam Rashi Alachrim, Kol Nechasav Alachas, Kama Vakam Shei Adam Chasa Nechasav. And Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah, in the Braisa, makes the same point that we had in the Mishnah, which is, all right, the lesson learned. If you can't do this for the Beis Hamikdash, you certainly can't do this if there's no good coming out of it. Utsrich Adikas Rechman Mikol Asher Lo Havamina, Kol De Islei Lo Yachrim Havamin Ach Min Echad Lechremei Kulei. So the Gemara says, now after the first Drasha, which is Kol Asher Lo, you can't give away all your possessions, then what's the point of categorization? So the Gemara basically says, I'll tell you what the point is. One might have thought that, I can't give away all my property, but I'll give away all my slaves. So, Kasa Rechmana Me'adam below Kol Adam. You can't give away all your slaves. V Kasa Rechmana Me'adam below Sagile, below Avoda. Now, if the Torah would have stopped over there, so then I could have at least made the argument. You know, I can't give away all my slaves because I got lots of fields and I need the workers, and okay. So I can't exist without that. However, Aval Sada Sagile Bidistirin, another word for Arisin. But look, let's say I give away all my property. I could still exist because I could basically work as a sharecropper. I'll go to my neighbor and I'll sharecrop in his property and I could live without properties. At least I can make that argument. So the Gemara says, fine. So Avadim, that is considered your livelihood. Your property, that's your livelihood. But if it's metaltalin, you know, possessions in my house, what's the big deal? I lose a couch. Big deal. I could still live without a couch. So tzricha, so that's why the Gemara has to now go through all these scenarios. And I say couch, by the way, right, the Gemara is probably more focused on the animals. But still, metaltalin. And they're all movables. Now, ubehema lamali. So the Gemara says, okay, what about me behema? What's the point over there? So the Gemara says that at least we could have entertained a havamina. That as long as you can be machrim, your possessions, well, maybe you can be machrim things that are associated with you that are not your possessions, you don't own. Like your son, like your daughter, like your Evan and Shivcha Ivriim, so or your stay mcnas or lease property. These are things you don't own. They're associated to you, but you don't own them. So Tamalam Rebehima, Ma Behema Yeshla Rashus Lamachraf, Koshi Yeshla Rashus Lamachra. So the Torah is telling us with the word Behema, it has to be something which you own and you could sell. So the Gemara says, Valo Bito Ketana Yeshla Rashus Lamachra. So Yachl Yachri Mena. So the Gemara says, okay, but a man could sell his daughter. So under certain circumstances, so the Torah allows for the sale of a daughter. So Tamalam Rebehima, Ma Behema Yeshla Rashus Lamachra Lolam, Av Koshi Yeshla Rashus Lamachra Lolam. That sale of the daughter is really limited. Right, it's we learned in the first parak of Kiddushin extensively, where there are significant limitations in terms of what that means. It's not you don't sell her for the purposes of just simply generating income. You sell her so that the recipient will hopefully marry her. It will lead to yid, either he or his son. And she goes free after a certain point in time if yid is not done. That is not comparable to our discussion. We're talking about commodities that you own and that you can sell indefinitely. Your daughter's not included in that list. Now the Gemara says, look, Rav Elazar ben Azariah's Musar is great Musar. What is he adding to the discussion? He's saying the same thing that Rabbi Eliezer is saying. So the Gemara says, well, there is just a small distinction that exists between Rabbi Eliezer and Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah. And that is Rabbi Ilah. Dama Rabbi Ilah, Be'usha Itkinu. Now in Usha they made the following institution. Now, historically, by the way, the Gemara is a little bit challenging because Usha occurs historically after Rabbi Eliezer and after Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah. Usha is one of those cities where the Sanhedrin was exiled after Churban Bayis Sheni. So, Sanhedrin were wandering Jews, wandering from town to town. 10 stops, if I remember correctly, in terms of the number of stops that Sanhedrin were exiled to, Usha being one of them. Usha, I think, was one of the first stops. Okay. Anyway, in Usha, they made the following rabbinic institution, which is a mevazvez, al yevazvez yoser mechomesh. They say that a person cannot give up more than 20% of his assets. How do they arrive at that number 20%? A really interesting Rashi over here, Chomesh Digarina mi Yaakov. Now, they learn it from Yaakov. Now, mind you, of course, is that Yaakov is not going to determine what the halacha is. It's the behavior of Yaakov, but they basically pattern the rabbinic institution based on Yaakov. Rashi says, Dichtiv etrei isurin. So he says, right, kol asher titinli, aser asrenu lach. So that's the double maaser. That's 20%. I know 10 of 10 is not exactly 20. Again, this is a rabbinic institution. It's not because Yaakov did it. It's based on. So Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah islay the Rabbi La da asal hashminishi adam chasal and chasav. So Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah is subscribing to the position of Usha, which is Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah says, look, don't squander your money. Don't even give more than 20% away. That's squandering your money. Where meanwhile, Rabbi Elazar does not subscribe to that. Rabbi Elazar lays the Rabbi La. The only thing Rabbi Elazar tells you is don't give everything away. Right? 90% of it away, that's okay, according to Rabbi Elazar. And Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah, on the other hand, he's being much more cautious, and he's basically, let's subscribe to Takanas Usha, which is don't give more than 20% away. So there was a person who wanted to give more than 20% of his assets away. And his friend said, don't do it. Umanu Rav Yishevav. And Rav Yishevav was that friend. In another version of the same story, Va'amrila Rav Yishevav, it was Rav Yishevav who wanted to give away all of his money. V'lo hinichu lo chayvav. Umanu Rav Yekiva. And it was Rav Yekiva who said, don't do it. Because Rav Yekiva is subscribing to Takanas Usha. Okay. Adkan, that takes us to the first sugya of today's daf. And it's an introduction to Chayrim. And the basic idea that you can't be machrim everything. And if you ask Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah, you can't even give more than 20% of your assets away.
Is a type of neder? I mean, like, can you annul it?
Doesn't sound that way. Hamachrim ben obito v'avdo v'shivchaso ha'ivrim v'sedemik naso ein muchramim. Now, I know this is going to sound repetitive, but remember, we know this information not because of the previous Mishnah, but only because of the previous Gemara. So now, we're hearing it in the Mishnah. A person cannot be machrim, his son, his daughter, his Evan and Shifcha Ivriim, and his Stei Mikna. And for one very simple reason, for all of them. He doesn't own any of them. Ein Muchram Shein Adam Machrim Davar Shein Shalom. HaKohanim V'Alevim Ein Machrim Im Divrei Rabbi Yehuda. Now, according to Rabbi Yehuda, a Kohen and a Levi is not in a position to effect a Cherem. Rabbi Shimon Omer, HaKohanim Ein Machrim Shacharam Shalahem, V'Alevim Machrimim Shein Acharam Shalahem. Now, Rabbi Shimon's position is, well, look, a Kohen, so he can't affect a Cherem, because ultimately the Cherem just simply goes to him. He becomes the recipient of a Cherem. So he can't be on the giving end of a Cherem when he's the recipient of the Cherem. As far as Levim are concerned, knock yourself out. Levim, go ahead, you could be a Machrim. You're not receiving the Cherem. The reception of the Cherem is done by Kohanim. So, Levim, you want to be a Machrim? Go ahead. I'm a Rebbe. Rebbe says, Nirin Div Rebbe Huda Bikarkaos. Shenamar ki achuzas olam hi lahem v'div Rabbi Shimon mematatlan she'in hachramim shalahem. So Rabbi says, look, I can actually split the difference between Rabbi Yehuda and Rabbi Shimon. Rabbi Yehuda is right when it comes to karka. Why? The Torah says ki achuzas olam hi lahem. As far as property is concerned, so the Torah says that Levim are going to be owners of the property indefinitely. Land that is designated as land for the Levim is always going to be land for the Levim. And when it comes to Metautlin, so I agree with Rabbi Shimon. A Levi wants to be machrim his movables. Well, it's not his forever, and he wants to be machrim it, by all means. Rabbi Yehuda bishlam ha-kohanim ein machrim ha-she'acham ha-shalahem. El Levim bishlam ha-mekarkel ha-machrim dechziv ka-achuz ha-silahem. El ha-metautel le-chama. So the Gemara starts off with questioning the position of Rabbi Yehuda. Because when all said and done, Rabbi Yehuda makes sense only up to a point. As far as the Kohanim being machrim, so they can't, because again, they're the recipients. So they can't be on the giving side of that transaction, being that they're the recipients. That part I get. And as far as Levim are concerned, so I understand the property, you can't be machrim because the Torah says that the land is theirs indefinitely. But why can't a Levi be machrim as movable items? Basically, what the Gemara starts off with is, you know, Rabbi Shimon seems correct. A Levi, if he wants to be machrim as movable items, why not? So I'm akram, mikol asher lo, umistei achuzaso. So the Gemara says, well, maybe what Rabbi Yehuda is based on is on a hekesh. Meaning, you're right, from a logical standpoint, there really is an easy way to differentiate between a Levi being machrim as property, where he can't because the Torah says it's his indefinitely, and his movables, where by right, by logic, he should be able to. But we have a hekesh. The Torah says, kol asher lo, umistei achuzaso. So the Torah is equating his property to his assets, to his movables. Makish metaltan lekarkos. Good, a hekesh. Rabbi, and we know the general rule, ein meshivan ala hekesh. Even if we have a logical argument that one could poke into a hekesh, but a hekesh now becomes simply impervious to that kind of questioning. Rabbi Shimon, bishlam akwanim kedam maran. Elavim, bishlam metaltan lachrim delo makish ala makarka amai. Haksiv achuzas olam hi lahem. So, and now the Gemara turns its attention to Rabbi Shimon. I don't understand the position of Rabbi Shimon. Rabbi Shimon says that a Levi cannot be machrim, not his property, not his movables. Good, I understand property. The Torah says that the land of a Levi is his indefinitely. But why can't he be, why can't he be machrim as movables? My machrim anami dekamra mitatale. So the Gemara says, you misunderstood. What he meant is that you can be machrim, but meaning when he talks to the Levim, what Rabbi Shimon meant is that you can be machrim your movables, not your property. So the Gemara says, yeah, but you know, at the end of the Mishnah, you don't get that sense. Because at the end of the Mishnah, Rabbi is splitting the difference. I think Rabbi Huda is right when it comes to property. I think Rabbi Shimon is right when it comes to movables. By virtue of Rabbi Huda Anasi saying that, what does it mean? That the core position of Rabbi Shimon is that a Levi can be machrim everything. And the core position of Rabbi Huda is that a Levi can be machrim nothing. So you don't really hear that in the Mishnah, that Rabbi Shimon has some sort of exception to his rule. So hachi kamar. So the Gemara says, yeah, but we didn't understand Rabbi correctly. And by the way, many times does the Gemara make this kind of shift, where Rabbi's not really splitting the difference. Rabbi's just explaining their positions. I'm a Rabbi Nir and Divir Rabbi Huda, li Rabbi Shimon b'karkarosh, av Rabbi Shimon lo nechlak, alav ela b'metaltalin, av al b'karkarosh modu le. When it comes to karka, what Rebbe's telling us is there's no debate. A Levi cannot be machrim as karka. Why? Because the Torah says that the karka of the Levim is his indefinitely. So he can't be machrim it. And there's no debate on that issue. The only time that there's a debate between the two is only when it comes to metaltlin. Rebbe Yehuda says he cannot be machrim metaltlin, as we learned just moments earlier, because of the hekesh. And according to Rabbi Shimon, a Levi can be machrim his movables. Continuing in the Gemara. We're on the bottom of the Amud. Amar Rabbi Chiyan bar Avin. Okay, halachas. Here we go with a number of halachas regarding cherem. Hechrim metaltlin nosnin l'chol kohen sheyirtzeh shenemar kol cherem b'Yisrael l'cha yiyah. Okay, rule number one, halacha number one given to us by Rabbi Chiyan bar Avin. Your machrim where the designee is the Kohanim, not the base of Mikdash. Good. Now it goes to the Kohanim. Which Kohanim? So here in halacha number one, you have Tova Sanah. You can determine which coin's going to go to. It's like Truma. As we are now on the top of Chav Ches Amad Beis. Hechrim Sdosav Nosan L'Kohen Shabbos Mishmar. Now, if you're Machrim, your property, so then it's going to go to the Kohanim. But which Kohanim? The Kohanim of the Mishmar. Whoever's working in the Mishmar that week, so they just got the best bonus in working in the Beis HaMikdash. Somebody was Machrim their property. You, the Kohanim, are working this week in the Beis HaMikdash. Congratulations. You yourselves just got new property. So shenemar kistei acherim lakon tia chuzaso v'gamar lakon migezal ager. So, and we know that when it says stei acherim lakon tia achuzaso, we're there even though the Torah does not clear that it's going to the kohen mishmar, but what we have is exereshava. The word lakohen over there is linked to the lakohen of gezal hager. Gezal hager, when a person steals from a ger and is unable to return to him because the ger died, and the ger has no halachic family, so what happens is that he's got to give the principal and a chomish and a karban asham, and he's got to bring it to the base of Mikdash and give it to the kohanim who are serving in the mishmar on that week. Now, how do I know that when it comes to gezel ager, it goes to the kohen of the mishmar? Detanya Hashem laKohen, Kano Hashem nasnu laKohen shabaos haMishmar. Ata Omer laKohen shabaos haMishmar, Einu ela lechol Kohen sheYirtze. The Braisa actually questions, how do I know this? Maybe with Gezel Hager, with the return of Gezel Hager, maybe he can decide which Kohen is going to go to. The Gemara says no, it's untenable. Kishu Omer Milvad ela Kippur Mashir Yechupar Bo Alav Harei beKohen shabaos haMishmar Kasa Medaber. Because remember, when a person is bringing back Gezel Hager, he's bringing back three things: the principal value, which he stole, plus a chomesh, plus a karban asham. Now, karban asham, there we know. Karban asham is obviously being brought in the base of Mikdash. It's a karban. And that means that who's enjoying this karban? The kohanim of that mishmar. So since they're the ones receiving the karban, so linked together with the karban is also going to be karan v'chomesh of the return of the gezel hager. Okay, so halacha number one of Rabbi Chiya bar Avin, Cherem Kohanim goes to which Cherem Kohanim Metaltalin, go to whichever Kohen you want. Cherem Kohanim property, go to the Kohen of the Mishmar. One more halacha. Sade Hayotze LeKohanim BeYovel. You know the field that goes out in Yovel? Now I know we talked about that in the previous perek, and I know I said this point many times, but we have not seen the Gemara articulate this point until right now. Sade Hayotze LeKohanim BeYovel. So when the land goes out in Yovel, no Sulem Mishmar Shepagabo, Yovel. So, which Kohanim does it go to? The Kohanim who are working in the Beis HaMikdash at their regularly scheduled routine, their Mishmar, on the beginning of Yovel. Now, when we say the beginning of Yovel, so generally speaking, we mean Yom Kippur. Meaning, with exception to one Tana, who we're going to see in a moment, so that means it's the Yom Kippur of that Yovel year, where now all fields return back to the ancestral owner, fields that were unredeemed or redeemed by somebody else are going to go to the Kohanim. Which Kohanim? The Kohanim of that Mishmar. You can imagine, in the Yovel year, the Kohanim are like looking at the calendar, seeing who's working that Mishmar in the Beis HaMikdash, and, you know, the Kohanim who happen to be working that Mishmar, obviously they're excited. Ibailu Pagabo B'Shabbos Mai. Question, great question. Let's say Yovel that year falls out on a Shabbos. Why is that a great question? Because we know on Shabbos that's the changing of the Mishmar. Right? They work on a weekly Mishmar basis where you have a group of Kohanim working for 1 week and then shift. And we move, transition to the next Mishmar. And that occurs on Shabbos, midday on Shabbos. So now with the changing of the guard, literally, right? That's when the Mishmar changes. So with the changing of the guard, so now who's going to be recipient of that land of the Yovel year when Yovel falls out on Shabbos? Meaning Yom Kippur falls out on Shabbos. So Amr Rabbi Chiya bar Amin Mishmei Dechupana Nosan LeMishmar HaYotze. So it's the Mishmar that started off that Shabbos, meaning that Yovel kicks in basically at the beginning of Yom Kippur. So obviously that's the Mishmar HaYotze. That's the exiting Mishmar. So Amr Rav Nachman Yitzchak Tain Amiach, we learned in the Brisa as well. Nim Seis Ata Omer Echa Yovel VeEcha Shvius Mishametes KeEchad. Now Yovel and Shmita, so sometimes they can work simultaneously. How so? So Yovel is at the beginning and Shemitah is at the end. Meaning Shemitah takes effect. Now we're not talking about, by the way, to be clear, we're not talking about Shemitah in terms of the letting your property lay fallow. That obviously starts at the beginning of the Shemitah year. We're talking about the cancellation of loans. Cancellation of loans occur at the end of the Shemitah year. So together with the cancellation of loans at the end of the Shemitah year, and if the upcoming year is the Yovel year, so we have cancellations of loans and Yovel occurring concurrently. To which the Gemara says, wait 1 second. First of all, the wording of the Braisa is strange. Adrabi Mishum Hachi Havai, Ema Mimnesha HaYovel. So the Gemara, just with one small textual correction, what the Braisa means, Mimnesha HaYovel, because Yovel and Shemitah are occurring simultaneously. Now, Bishlam Shavis Bisofa Dichsi Mikesh Shavashanim Taase Shemitah. Now, I understand how Shemitah cancels at the end because the Torah says so. Ela Yovel b'tchilaso b'yom haKippur mudichsev. So the Gemara says, but Yovel, that you were off. Meaning Shemitah is at the end of the Shemitah year, meaning Rosh Hashanah, of the end of the Shemitah year, or Rosh Hashanah of the eighth year, if you will. And but Yovel's on the 10th day of the year on Yom Kippur. The Torah says so. But Yom HaKippurim Tavir Shofar B'chol Artzachem. So how can you tell me that they're occurring concurrently? They're 10 days off one from another. So Hamani Rabbi Shmuel ben Osho Rabbi Yochanan ben Brokahi. The author of this braisa subscribes to the opinion of Rabbi Shmuel, who says that Yovel takes effect on Rosh Hashanah, even though obviously he's not disagreeing with the pasuk. We'll blow the shofar and Yom Kippur of that Yovel, but in terms of when Yovel actually kicks in, that's going to be on Rosh Hashanah. Damar Rosh Hashanah hu dechal Yovel. The status of Yovel starts on Rosh Hashanah. Fine. So now we understand Shana the braisa. Now Shamei Chizkiya bar biluto ve'azo amar kamei de Rabbi Abau v'lekish metaltele karkaos. So the Gemara says, okay, but let me ask you a question. Why don't we create a hekesh between metaltan and karka? And as we learned on the previous amud, there are some tanaim who make such a hekesh. To which the Gemara's response is, that was machlokas. So lav tanaihi de ika de makish v'ika de lamakish kiman darma lo makshinan. Okay, and the author of this brisa simply does not make such a hekesh. And since the author of this brisa does not make such a hekesh, so therefore, just because one halacha applies by metaltan does not necessarily mean the other halacha is going to apply by karka. Let's quickly recap. Today we finished off the discussion of competing bids and what happens when you have competing bids over property and taking the 25% surcharge that goes to the owner into account. What happens then? What happens with people backing out from their bids and the shared liability? Rav Chista introduces to that idea that when you and I are sharing liability, that means, of course, that we're going to have to split the liability. We then started the topic of Charamim today. Daf Chavches in Erchin is the beginning of Charamim. We introduced ourselves to the topic of Cherem. First thing we covered is that you cannot be machrim all your property, or Elazar ben Azariah goes a step further. Not only is that true regarding Cherem and the designee being the base of Mikdash, it's true in general. Don't squander your property. Not more than 20%. He subscribes to Takanas Usha. The Mishnah talks about you being machrim only things you own, not things that are associated with you. Either things that you leased, or your children, or your Eved Ivri, or your Shivcha Ivriya, your Ama Ivriya. So those things are things you do not own. They're associated to you. You cannot be machrim them. And then a machlokus in the Mishnah between Rabbi Yehuda and Rabbi Shimon, whether a Levi could be machrim. And the Gemara goes on to explain that. And finally today, we finished off with three halachas Rav Chiya Bar Avin in terms of which Kohanim are going to be recipients of various Matnas Kahuna. Cherem on Metaltalin, Tovasana. You can decide which Kohen it goes to. The Cherem on property, that goes to the Kohen HaMishmar, who is working in the Beis HaMikdash at that time you were a Machrim. Land that goes out in Yovel, because either went unredeemed or is redeemed by someone other than the owner, that goes to the Kohanim who are working in the Mishmar in the Beis HaMikdash.